Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Steve Williamson here, sitting across from me is
all these other really, really fine Democratic Perspective folks. Here we are. Here we are broadcasting to the world. Steve, did you ever think here in 2019 that we would be, you know, they could be listening in Saint-Tropez. They could be listening in Brazil. They could be listening in Klaus's hometown.
Yeah, listening in Germany and in Montana.
That's right.
If you look at the statistics from the website, we got listeners all over the world. At least we did the last time I looked a couple of years ago. So there's a scattering in Europe and even in Eastern Europe. So we've got somebody in Montenegro is listening to the program on the internet. Who, and all those what, people, why, I don't know.
Well, all these people have to do, I guess, is besides give us the support that we need just by listening and just by nodding their heads whenever I'm speaking, of course, shaking their heads when Klaus is speaking.
That's right.
And then writing a check once in a while would be, that would make, certainly our supporters here who keep track of such things, like Dick Searle and a few of the others that actually, keep us on the air.
Just take a second to thank Dick Searle and to thank Gary. We kid him about being silent, Gary, but Gary does the website now every week. And Dick Searle has managed the money for a Democratic Perspective so that we don't really have to think about it too much except worry.
That's right.
We don't have to think about how to undo the worry.
We get to be the on-air talent. We get to be the geezers gone wild. I heard that this morning, I think is a good description.
Who's that fellow sitting next to you, like arm to arm, cheek to cheek?
Well, we're trying a first. We want to say this too.
Let's see if you can get my name right.
I'm not going to say your name. We are live streaming, by the way, on Facebook. If you go to my Facebook page, Michael Cosentino, go to my Facebook page, you can pick us up. You can see who's been talking at you now for these 7 or 8
who's
years.
Who's this guy here?
This is, I'll tell you who it's not. It's not Donald Trump. And it's not Martina Navratilova.
Okay, I get it. You're still afraid to
name.
It's not Martina Navratilova.
See, anyway, it's Klaus von Stradahan. Can you say that, Mike?
of course, we got him there.
Okay. Hey,
I've been mispronouncing his name for seven years.
I went to college in Arizona, 20 years of school. You can say a simple name like Klaus von Stutterheim. You can say that.
All right.
That's the first time.
But I've been telling people that, until we squeeze more money out of you, I'm going to mispronounce your name. That's been one of those things. And I have to admit the station owner had a particular name for that, which I can't repeat on the air. But we are going to talk. So we are preparing the audience this morning for a talk about Donald Trump.
Yeah.
We just can't. We try not to. Week after week goes by, we talk about all these really kind of progressive things. We talk about climate change. We talk about economics. We talk about all these things in this crazy, crazy time we're living in. The media couldn't get over the word unprecedented for 2 years. But this is a slide into fascism. Now you're not going to let me talk until the last 10 minutes, which is fine.
That's right. Last ten minutes you get.
And then I will rant and rage.
And
I will be
but
talking.
I was going to say that we mostly do interviews. If you go to our website, it's one interview after another. So today, folks, the reason we're yakking and talking and fooling around is it's just us,
this
the three of us.
We couldn't find anybody.
Yeah, nobody would come and talk to us this week. Next week we don't want that much honesty. Next week we have Juan Cole, right, who's a big expert on the Middle East, professor up at the University of Michigan. Yeah. After that we have
look up Juan Cole. What's Paul, his informed?
Informed comment. Consent.
Informed comment.
Informed comment, that's right. Yeah. Yes, not informed consent.
Yeah, right.
Brilliant guy. He had has a tremendous number of people who go to the website and follow international.
Has a great blog called Informed Comment, and you can find it on Truthout and many other places.
So the way we're doing this today is we're each taking a section to talk about a topic that we want to, and I'm going to lead it off, and Klaus and Mike's grabbing his notes, otherwise he doesn't know what he's going to say. And you guys can chime and give your opinion, because this is a series. What I'm going to be talking about really is the circular firing squad, the Democratic race, the primary race. And we've got, well, I don't know, what is it, Mike? 15 to 20 candidates in there. Some of them are not serious. For some people, it's a way to make money. It's a way to get your name going. They're not really serious candidates.
Well,
it's not clear that that's really a circular firing squad so far.
No.
Haven't fired at each other.
No.
Yes. We both object to your use of that term because it is wrong.
Right. But a circular.
There's a potential.
Well,
for that.
President Obama recently got kind of worried about some of the stuff going on and talked about not doing a circular firing squad.
Yes.
So you're right. That's so true. Far, there hasn't been a circular firing squad, and we don't want one. Now, in the last election for the House and Senate, Democratic candidates got 10 million more votes than Republican candidates. They didn't realize the result of having 10 million more votes. A lot of the voters are new voters. They're not registered Democrats. They're independents. When we're going to have a primary, unless you're a registered Democrat, in most states, you're not going to be able to vote for the Democratic candidate. And we have a huge number of these folks. I think there's one thing to remember for Democratic candidates is that people out there, particularly younger people, are tremendously turned off by American politics, the toxicity, the anger, the charges and stuff. And we need to have a primary where people openly disagree about things like Mike and Klaus were saying, but one that doesn't begin to be toxic. And if you look at it, really hurts. Remember when President Obama tried to get medical care for everybody in the country? It took months and months of Democrats fighting Democrats and all these special interests trying to get in. It was a huge mess. And so by the time this Obamacare, which really has helped millions of people, got into law, it had gone through this nasty sausage-making process, which really turned people off.
And there's a quote from Bismarck that goes, "It's a good thing that people don't know how other sausages or laws are made."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. And so when you see that, the thing we want to do is we want to have a Democratic primary. And we want the candidates to disagree because there are lots of disagreements and there's lots of criticism, but we want to have it, no matter how intense the disagreement about policies, that it doesn't turn into this toxic, nasty thing. And the pressure to do that and to kind of step beyond, I don't think you'll ever see a Democrat acting like Donald Trump, right, Mike? I mean, nobody is going to do that.
Well, I'm going to quote America is liberal, Peter Dow. We are beyond Hillary versus Bernie, although you can hear plenty of argument there. We are beyond Pelosi's got this because the Democrats took the House. We are beyond Mueller will take them all down and save us. We are beyond 2020 will fix everything. The President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, is above the law. In other words, not even the laws of the United States are controlling this narcissistic sociopath.
The
point of this, if Democrats and progressives and leftists don't pull together and join forces, the fight is over. We'll all be sitting in a camp in Omaha.
We can't have the Bernie bros sitting out this election. You've got to stay in the election, folks, even if you're not a Democrat, and even if your candidate, the guy you like best, is not the candidate. We can't have women saying, I'm not going to vote. Guys won the primaries. I'm not going to vote. Because right. It's not a woman. Exactly. And we understand that women are the major force in the Democratic Party.
Progressive candidate that is like throwing away your vote.
We have to defeat Trump. And Trump has, at this point in the campaign, way before it's starting, a war chest of $30 million. At this point, when Obama was looking for reelection, he had $2 million. So we're facing not only a candidate who's using his incumbency in a nearly criminal way to advance his agenda, but we also have someone who has a vast storehouse of money. And he's using a lot of it to slander Democrats already, usually a lot of it's being spent on Facebook. Right. So the only thing we want, folks, is to have a clean Democratic candidate. And it's fine to criticize people. And candidates are all going to have weaknesses. If you look at someone like Elizabeth Warren, I can't find anyone who has stood up for ordinary citizens for as long as Elizabeth Warren has. I can't find anyone. I can't find anyone who's been as systematic in standing up before she was in Congress and now that she's been in it and now that she's running.
She was the first to say no to PAC money. She's the one that wants to put CEOs in jail like they do in Iceland and other countries when they break the law. She's a great candidate, a great president.
So we have Elizabeth Warren as this great candidate in a lot of ways, but she has her flaws. Now, she's running against a sociopath, and these attacks on her as Pocahontas and stuff, she did not handle them well. So one thing that we have to look for is a candidate who can handle these really sort of vicious and unexpected.
Yeah. Well,
let me just finish, Mike, which is, if you've ever run into a sociopath in your life, and I hope you folks have not, I've run into one and maybe another.
Every CEO in America is a sociopath.
They're quicker and faster and willing to do stuff that you aren't. If you're trying to tell the truth, they just lie. You think the parameters of what's respectable and what's an honorable way to deal with a conflict is one thing. They're completely beyond it. If you look at Trump, the way he treated the Republican candidates during the primary, all that name calling, that slandering people, that insulting people,
that's his trick, right? I mean, he attaches a sort of caricature adjective to a name, and they never recover from it.
Now, I'm an opponent of Jeb Bush's policies. But he would never do that kind of stuff and didn't do it. And the past, I mean, Romney would never do that stuff. The past, as much as we dislike their politics, we've never had a Republican candidate who's a sociopath. And so we need a Democratic candidate who can handle that. And if you looked at AOC, she's someone who can handle these vicious attacks. They did a study, Media Networks, I have to remember the name, Media Matters, I think it is. The Fox News has mentioned her negatively 30,000 times. 3,000 times, you're correct.
That's a lot.
Over 3,000 times. Yeah. And she's a junior freshman congresswoman. I think she's the youngest woman in the Congress.
That's
maybe
right.
The youngest one ever to be elected.
That's also right.
They've done 3,000 attacks on her in a few months.
In 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
Yeah, and she's responded to that even, you know, that when I'm not back, you know, and she understands what they're doing. They're hoping to bowl her over with this wall of negativity. This is what they do. This time to circle the wagons against this kind of human support.
Right.
Americans.
This hate thing is exactly what they did to Hillary Clinton over the years. It's what they did to Pelosi. Now they picked her for some reason.
And it's a mistake.
And that's a mistake.
It's a mistake, because if you look at pictures of Nancy or even Hillary, there are moments where you catch them, you know, and their face looks ugly. I've never seen a picture of Alexandria who looks bad. She always looks good. So to demonize her is going to be much, much harder. And for all we know, might even backfire.
Yeah, I think it sort of backfires because they were attacking her on the internet because after the Puerto Rican Day parade in New York, she got into an SUV and went home. And so they attacked her. They had pictures. Instead of going on a subway, she went in an SUV. And then she responded,
Well,
my aunt will be really upset about your attacking her SUV. Yeah. She likes her SUV.
Exactly.
So her aunt picked her up after the parade. But she's able to answer these vicious, unpredictable attacks.
Hillary didn't answer anything for 30 years because the media instructions, the media savvy folks at the time advised her, said, no, all you do is carry it on. AOC says, who understands 2019 media, who understands social media, answers every one of them. No matter how small, you must answer it. This is why you had a generation of people who never heard a positive thing about Hillary Clinton. You have a generation or two of Americans who never heard anything other than the most incredible lies about Hillary Clinton. So while we all, as they've been politically active, thought Hillary was a shoo-in, other people knew different.
Yeah, and the hate machine rolls on. So my point about Elizabeth Warren is that it's almost impossible to beat her record, her experience. But she was, excuse me, ham-handed in handling these
one
attacks.
One thing, let it go.
Yeah, no. What I'm saying is, all our candidates are going to have some weaknesses in background and some controversies. And we have to look at the end result of this. But you need a candidate who'll be able to run against a sociopath with a vast amount of money. And that's my point. So when Democratic candidates are talking, we need to not add to the toxicity. We need to not have a campaign that sounds toxic, that turns people off. That's going to be difficult to do. We've got, 15 to 20 candidates running. And the problem is when you get in a horse race and it's down to the line, the next guy is going to be beaten on his horse.
We're going to see Democrats change American politics in 2019. I had a friend that ran for mayor of Cottonwood. He stood on a street corner right there at 89A and 260 with his opponent. And they waved at people, and people stopped, and they talked to them because they both wanted what was best for the office. They both wanted what was best for the town. And they demonstrated that by campaigning together, even though they were opponents. This is what they need to take a lesson from Reuben Hottegy and his opponent and 2006 or whatever it was, and do that sort of thing.
All right. So it's tough.
That's a very unusual set of circumstances. I've never even heard of a Republican and a Democrat campaigning together.
Well, I'm talking about Democrats campaigning.
Two Democrats.
Talking about the primary. He was talking about the circular firing squad in the primary. About opposing
sides. We had Paul Chevalier and I forgot our first name, Harris, on, and they were running against each other, and they came on the show. I had perfectly civil discussion.
Yeah, we have done
one,
that.
One and one. So it does happen. I don't know if we can get that far. It's going to be a tough campaign. You have an extraordinarily, from our point of view, unscrupulous Republican Party. And they were looking at some of the statistics, and I was looking at E.J. Dionne, who's not a big, I'm not a big fan of his writing in the Washington Post. But the amount of people, for example, there are twice as many Republicans who have heard about the Green New Deal as there are Democrats. And the Green New Deal is just been beat up on Fox News. But that's a bad statistic. When they've got twice as much information, they know twice as much about it as Democrats do. I mean, it's misinformation. But still, that's a dangerous situation. So I think that's my time, folks, is to appeal to you. You know, if your candidate doesn't win, I heard last time it really disturbed me and the other guy who's been really stand up is Bernie Sanders. I mean, Bernie Sanders has stood up for being Bernie Sanders his whole darn life. But we have to, everybody has to unite to get change in the country. And we're going to have to win big. We're going to have to try to take the Senate, and we're going to have to try to keep the majority in the House as well as defeat Donald Trump. He's a formidable sociopathic guy willing to go way outside the parameters of the normal, the acceptable, and the honorable.
We can't
and the law for that matter.
And the law. We can't talk about Donald Trump without talking about the Republican Party. The Republican Party enables this, as you called him many times, narcissistic sociopath, which is very, but his people are media savvy. He knows if he does 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 crazy things a day, the media will go after that and not forget the fact that he's that he put an attorney general in that will not bring obstruction of justice charges, which everybody knows he has. We're talking about as a person above the law. I want to get the Mueller report's going to come out this week. Let me say that again. Everybody's saying the Mueller report's going to come out this week. Politico did a wonderful description on their cover story today is what to expect from the 400-page Mueller report. What we saw, of course, was from Trump's hand-picked attorney general who has shielded other Republicans from any kind of prosecution for their incredible wrongdoing.
And they had months to control the dialogue about what the Mueller report says, and we still don't know how redacted it is. Redacted means that, you know, if we have a spy in Russia, say, we take his name out when we talk about the information he gave us. But redaction could also mean destroying the content of the report to
Barr says no, but Barr is desperate to save what's left of his reputation, which is nothing, by the way. He has become a complete and total shill. What he did for Reagan and the other Republicans compared to this is minuscule. He was able to get away with it because of a different media and a different time. He has instantly, he has become a pariah in the legal community, and he knows it.
So you're going to have a campaign where people are going to say Bernie is too old to run, where they're going to say this kind of thing.
I would say Bernie is too left to run.
Too far left to run. You have to listen to it, folks. Support whoever you want. For example, I like Beto, but I don't necessarily think he should be president of the United States. I think he should be part of the dialogue because he's an extraordinarily different candidate. And you already see these hit pieces in the New York Times, of all places, attacking him because he likes reading the Odyssey by somebody who, Molly Roberts, who is clueless about what the Odyssey is actually about and what Odysseus or Ulysses is actually is. He's not Superman out running around. He's a guy who figures out how to defeat the Trojans. And then he makes a mistake. He goes and attacks a completely innocent bunch of people and kills a bunch of them, and gods don't like it. And he spends the next decade or so of his life trying just to get home to his wife and kid. So try to avoid the toxic stuff. A lot of it, when I lived in New York, there's a lot of toxicity. And it goes way back to Jimmy Carter. They hated Jimmy Carter with that because he was a Southerner and so forth and so on. So try to avoid the toxic writers, even if they're basically on our side or you agree with part of it. So I think we want to go to Klaus.
I want to make one comment about.
No comments, Klaus.
Oh yes.
No comments.
Oh yes. Oh yes. You're not going to get away that easily.
No comments. Right, Mike?
The only candidates you've mentioned so far are Elizabeth Warren and
Bernie Sanders.
And Beto and Bernie Sanders, and I consider them all marginal. The one that I think is most interesting is Mayor Pete Buttigieg, as is his name, and we can talk about him, but that's a real candidate. The other ones, I think, are sort of, at the end will be, they were also around. The danger really, I think, the danger in the party is Bernie or the Bernies, and the Bernie bros who...
Okay, so this is one point of view, folks. But what I'm trying to do is not really put forward candidates at this point. I'll do that at a later point. And it's not that I'm a big Bernie supporter, But what I'm trying to do, Klaus, is a little bit different. I think these are all major candidates. I disagree with you, but that's one thing. But the other thing is we have to run a campaign that does not turn people off. So now we'll hand it over to you, Klaus, and you can talk about whatever you're going to. What are you going to talk about, Klaus?
I was going to talk about refugees and immigration and illegal immigrants. I mean, there are three kinds of people who come to the United States, right? They're refugees, and then they're legal immigrants, and then they're illegal immigrants. So starting with the refugees, during Reagan's administration, the United States admitted 200,000 refugees. By the time Obama took office and under his rule, the number was 100,000 refugees. And as you know, there's millions of refugees scattered all over the world. By the time Trump took over, he lowered that number to 50,000. And for this year, it's 30,000. So far, they've only admitted 11,000, and we're halfway through. So it's hard to believe that they'll even make that number.
Tell folks what legally refugees are coming into the United States.
Well, refugees are people, only 1% of those who apply for refugee status are actually accepted as refugees. They have to prove that there's danger in returning to their country, and they're vetted backwards and forwards so that only a small number make it. But it doesn't have. It could be many more than 30,000. And these people, incidentally, integrate very well into their community. They're hardworking. They have children. The average American couple has 1.9 children, which keeps the population where it is. But they're more fertile. They have more children, which will be great because they're going to have to pay for the Social Security for the old geezers like us. Yes, did you want to say something?
We have here in the show a legal immigrant in terms of Klaus. You're from Berlin originally. You live in the United States most of your life at this point, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting story. When I applied, it was under the old 1924 law, which had a limit on the total number of immigrants, and then every country had a quota based on the then ethnic composition of the United States. And since Germans were the largest immigrant group and there was no mass emigration from Germany, I walked into the consulate in Berlin and said, I want to emigrate. And they said, fine, why don't you fill out these forms? And that was basically it. Now, and then 6 months after I got here, the door slammed shut and it became much harder. And from then on, the emphasis of immigration was not the country quota, but it was family. Was bringing families together. So if you had family in the United States, you had a fairly easy way of getting in. If you didn't, it became very difficult.
But you were a refugee that
I was
that
not by, a refugee.
I mean, not refugee. You were an immigrant with you went you came to the United States and went to the university, right?
Right.
You were a university
student. Exactly. I was a refugee mentally, but legally, I was an immigrant. So refugees are now, as I said, down to 30,000, and it's embarrassing. These are some of the best people for our society, and Trump has basically cut them off because he has this. I don't even think he has any real convictions, but he has. Part of his campaign has been to demonize, quote, the others, and this is a strategy that despots use, and so he has demonized the illegal immigrants, of course, the legal immigrants as well, and the refugees. And guess what? They're not white. They all have at least a tint, if not.
What's the situation with legal immigrants? I mean, how many legal immigrants are there?
Legal immigrants
coming in.
Immigrants. The number has not changed very much. It's about a million a year. So that really hasn't changed. So you have the legal immigrants. You have the refugees, and then you have the. And then you come to the trickier part, which are the illegal immigrants, the people who cross the border. Now, under U.S. and international law, everybody who crosses into the United States, whether they cross legally or illegally, is legally allowed to ask for asylum. And then it takes forever to prove it, and most of them don't get it. And if you approve, then you still have to go before an immigration court, and this can take years. In the meantime, you're not running around the country free, but you're in camps. The illegal immigrants I should point out one other thing. And you wouldn't know this if you listen to Trump. The number of illegal immigrants has dropped sharply. In 2000, it was about a million, and now it's down to something like 400,000. So there isn't a mass illegal immigration. In fact, it's come down sharply, and it's come down sharply, particularly by Mexicans. Incidentally, and again, this is not known, most illegal immigrants are not people who sneak across the border, the so-called wetbacks, but they're people who simply overstay their visa. But if you cross the border illegally and you're caught, you can ask for asylum. The odds that it will be granted is relatively slim. As you all know, for a few months, the children were separated from their parents and put in what some people call cages. Actually, they're not really cages. If you've seen pictures of it,
looks like a cage.
It looks like a cage, right? It's
behaves like a cage. I think it's a cage.
How would you sum up the immigration situation? You divided three different sorts of immigrants, basically, and you've explained that carefully. And you explained that Trump's using it as a demagogic way.
The administration knows no limits. I'm quoting Julian Castro, another Democratic candidate for governor. He said,
for president.
The cruelty of this administration never seems to end, Castro said. These folks want to choose cruelty as a weapon against the people and against their political opponents. Now, we're talking about Trump's latest plan about releasing, and I'm sure his base loves this, releasing immigrants in the sanctuary cities, and especially targeting Pelosi's district.
Hauling them to these districts, even though they're thousands of miles.
Yeah, and that part is really funny, because they'll be welcomed with open arms.
Exactly.
But it's vindictive. It's a level of vindictiveness.
Using human beings, including children, says Pelosi's spokesman, as pawns in their warped game to perpetuate fear and demonize immigrants is despicable, in some cases, criminal. I believe, and I hope to hell, that Trump and several of his people are charged with crimes against humanity. They are committing them almost on a daily basis. Trump is failing at the border. I mean, this is in an article in USA Today contributed with Daniel Gonzalez from the Arizona Republic. Trump is failing and flailing at the border, so he is looking to blame Democrats with a desperate and cynical ploy, says Frank Sherry, president of the American Boys, a progressive group that advocates for immigration system reform.
So Klaus, do you
this
agree
is what
with
you expect
of
an out-of-control 12-year-old bully, not president of the United States?
Right. So to sum it up, Klaus, and we're going to go to Mike in a minute, how would you sum it up? I mean, do you agree with the kind of thing he's saying that it's almost the level of
crimes against humanity
of sort of racism in this stuff. I mean,
of course it is. I mean, he's been a, I don't know whether he's actually a racist, but he realizes that the racist part of the population who had not been out loud because it wasn't cool or good manners, you know, to be racist. I mean, he said in, where was it, in Charleston, that you know, where the guy drove into protesters who were, you know, pro or rather anti, you know, white supremacy. He said there were good people on both sides. I mean, how clear a message can you send?
This show, at least as far as this third of the show, was supposed to be about Donald Trump, and I want to
go ahead, Mike. You've got the mic.
Got it. Thanks. See if you can find Christine Todd Whitman's video. Where this is a Republican governor from a family of Republicans, been Republican all her life. Everybody she knows and respects is Republican, and she spent 15 minutes on the internet demanding the resignation of Donald Trump and that the Republicans need to start helping him resign. And she lists the reasons, and she lists them beautifully. So this incredibly articulate Republican governor, and she's still a Republican, is telling us why the emoluments clause should not be ignored, and that the president needs to resign now.
Explain to folks what the emolument clause is.
We want to talk about Michael Lewis's book, he wrote. This is the guy who wrote Liar's Poker and a bunch of other things, talking about destroying the government from within. When the transition team, when Trump's people took over, they threw out the manuals that his own transition team, we're talking about Chris Christie and all the other Republicans, wrote for them for the transition of government, because he knew that these people, they knew, they threw out the manuals that were supposed to help them run the government. They were going to help them transition the government. They threw them out because they knew that their mission was to destroy the agency that they were working for, or at least render it ineffective. So we have our own government being attacked by its leaders, specifically by the Republican Party and specifically by Donald Trump. Michael Lewis, I'm not making this stuff up. All Michael Lewis wrote Liar's Poker. He did The Big Short. He did these wonderful exposés in America that tell us more about American life, especially American financial life, than maybe any three people have in the last 20 years.
Big Short was a great movie.
Big Short, exactly.
Yeah. That's fabulous movie.
A lot of fun. That's,
yeah. Yeah.
It's good to have a movie.
That's Michael Lewis. I'm quoting
from some of the characters.
I'm quoting from his book, The Fifth Risk, by the way, with a 2018 copyright. You want to watch Michael Lewis, The Fifth Risk, talking about the insanity of the Trump White House, where Chris Christie is sitting in Trump Tower and Trump is screaming at him because he's where you're taking my money. And Christie and Steve Bannon are trying to explain to him the laws of the United States say that we can raise money for it. We must raise money for a transition team. And no, you can't use the money for your reelection or for your rallies or for your golf trips. So they're trying to explain and Trump isn't listening. He's saying, shut it down. Shut down my transition team because you're taking my money. And so you got these two, as far as I'm concerned, extremists explaining the laws of the United States to the president and why he can't do that.
He doesn't listen.
Oh yeah, no. Eventually Christie was fired because he kept raising money to run the transition team. So the American government, there's about 500 people that Trump was responsible for finding jobs. Now, it's one thing to find a Secretary of State. It's another thing to find as Lewis says, the head of the Barry Goldwater Scholarship Fund, which is also a presidential appointee. And that's what the government provides. They give you office space, but they don't give you personnel.
You're right, Mike. I mean, he has fired so many heads of agencies who are now run by...
That was my other thing. We're talking about a consolidation of power here, a consolidation of power. He fires the heads of the agencies, puts acting heads in, because they are answerable to him, just like on his TV show.
And they don't have to be appointed by the Senate.
And they don't have to go through Senate confirmation. So this is, we've never seen anything like this. This is when we throw words around like authoritarian or dictator, this is what we mean. He's replacing all of the safeguards, as many as he can anyway, with people who are only loyal to him and not the American people. This is nuts.
I'd say, Mike, do you think he even knows the difference? For him, it's all loyalty to him. The idea that you're loyal to the United States of America and the United States of America's government, do you think that even registers with the man?
I don't think so.
I don't care. I don't care. So you're saying you want to use that, his mental illness as a defense for his behavior that's destroying the country that we live in?
Of course we're not saying
our
that.
Our slide into fascism?
No, Mike.
Well,
easy,
fine. I don't care what the reason is. I don't care if he's if he was beaten as a child. I don't care. At this point.
All right. So you care about what he's doing. You don't care
what
why
care
he's doing
about
it.
Lies and lies and lies and more lies. How about this? Don Jr. says, Russians make up a pretty disproportionate cross-section of a lot of our assets. We see a lot of money from Russia. Jared says, we don't even rely on American banks. We have all the funding we need from Russia. Don says, I have nothing to do with Russia. No deals, no loans, no nothing.
How about his plan to appoint Ivanka Trump as head of the World Bank? Now that part is
an interesting one, Klaus. His daughter, he's going to make the World
Bank.
She's
good with numbers, he says.
Oh, he's good with numbers, yeah. Yeah, I mean, great.
Whether you like it or not, the Internet has become a modern-day town square. And right now I'm quoting Robert Reich, former
Secretary of Labor.
A powerful, powerful Trump critic, or at least he was for a long time. More and more, especially young people, get the news. I get 90% of my news comes from Facebook and Rachel Maddow and Facebook. Well, and Lawrence O'Donnell and Facebook. Anyway, Bill Maher says, I don't need, the Mueller investigation. I have a TV. He's saying all you need to do is watch his lies over and over and over again, and where he's sitting at 43% approval rating, according to one poll, and then he immediately goes out. The poll is released, and within 10 minutes, he's touting that he's got 55% approval rating. I am tongue-tied because there are, I don't know where to begin. Do we begin with, we talk about immigrants, we talk about his lies in immigration, do we talk about the crimes against humanity with children, do we talk about his lies about the economy, do we talk about his lies about foreign policy, do we talk about his lies, do we talk about the way he, Governor Ducey, let's move it to Arizona. Governor Ducey wisely says, don't close the border. Billions of dollars of trade go on every day. Would really, really hurt Arizona business. What happens in a meeting with Donald Trump? Is it a threat or is it a reward? Is it a carrot or a stick? As we know, it's going to be both. He's either threatened Doug Ducey to doing something or he said, I'm going to reward you for siding. The very next day, he gets blasted in the media, Doug Ducey does, for switching, saying, okay, fine, close the border. What happened? What happened in that phone call? What happened in that meeting with Trump? This is what Arizona is. This is what people need to know. What happens in the alternate universe of Donald? There's one thing going around now about what a brave Vietnam veteran he was.
Folks. I mean, we're in a very, very, very difficult situation. Mike's going to sum up. We've got some good programming coming up.
Tomorrow, you want Terry Goddard will be in Cottonwood at this Red Rooster Cafe. You want to check now. He's starting his campaign, Outlaw Dirty Money again, Arizona constitutional amendment to make money in Arizona politics more transparent. Come see our former attorney general and ex-mayor of Phoenix talking in Cottonwood at the Red Rooster Cafe on Old Town Cottonwood about how you can get involved in making Arizona politics more transparent. We have Mark Kelly coming next month. This is a
it's 6
big
o'clock
deal.
Tomorrow at 6 o'clock,
yeah,
right?
Give the time,
there's information everywhere in the world. Find it. Don't forget Mark Kelly next month right here in Sedona, folks. Don't forget BBID, that Verde Valley Independent Democrats have this and all the information you want.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZN. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.